today, who is the teacher, who is the student, or perhaps my subtitle should be, we are all teachers, we are all learners. I wanted to start with a little bit of an overview of CBPR methods, although in this group I'm probably preaching to the choir, so I'm going to make this pretty quick. Community-based participation research, our CBPR methods, also called community-partnered research, participatory action research, their collaborative report approaches between the researcher and the community, and we're trying to establish a joint understanding of phenomena and integrate the knowledge gained with interventions, policy, and social change to improve the health of communities. So these are some characteristics of CBPR, and again, probably most of you are familiar with these things, and I'm going to build on many of these issues as I go through the presentation, so it may be better to just give you sort of an overview of that slide. I think one of the issues that many of us face as faculty members is that we've really struggled on how to balance issues, as you see in the diagram there, of research, education, and clinical practice in nursing education. How do we put all of these issues together? And depending upon where you work, these elements may or may not be weighted, given equal weight. But I know many times I've thought to myself, do you ever wish that you could find a way to create a seamless blend of these three elements and involve students in all aspects of it? And hopefully these slides will give you some idea about how we might be able to accomplish that. CBPR research often refers to traditional research methods and practices in the community as parachute research, which is the kind of thing where you sort of drop in, do your thing, and leave. One of Barbara Israel's favorite expressions is also calling this drive-by research, and having my office in Newark, I kind of like that one. These types of research designs often set up adversarial relationships between the university and the surrounding community. And we need to look a little bit at why this kind of happens. I think the first thing we want to look at is the focus of the university. If you work in a university that is a health sciences university, chances are good that the people that you work with in the community are aware of the fact that the university provides health services, and they may see you in a somewhat different light and see your role in a somewhat different light than if you are not affiliated with that type of university. The second issue with the town and gown phenomenon, which I'm sure all of you are familiar with, or sometimes I like to call it the tale of two cities. You have, you know, a university which sees itself as the town itself, and the rest of the town is incidental to that. And of course, the town sees the university as one little speck as part of that town. And this can be, you know, fueled by lots of things. If you have problems in the college community with drugs or, you know, alcohol intake, overcrowding. I know that some of the studies I'm going to talk about in a few minutes I've done in New Brunswick, and, you know, we now have a phenomenon at Rutgers with our football team and our women's basketball team where a couple times a year we drag ESPN in and all these people, and it creates a different environment for the people who live there. Not everybody is happy about it either. The third piece up there is the Tuskegee effect, and while there certainly are many people in the community and poor communities who cannot, you know, will not actually mention the word Tuskegee, the element of mistrust is there, and many times I've had people say to me, why are you interested in working with us? And so that's something I think that we all face, and these CPPR methods are a good way to try and dispel some of the fears that people have relating to that question. I think those three things in general kind of promote an atmosphere where there can be a shortage of clinical sites for students. And again, particularly if you don't work in a health sciences university, or particularly if your college or university is located in an area where there are many other schools and colleges of nursing, you're going to find that you have a problem with competition for clinical sites for students. And with that goes a decreased access to research subjects for faculty. So those are two concerns that we need to address in this process. This is one of my favorite quotes, and I certainly think this could be applied to CBPR, although I'm not certain that he entirely meant it that way. But Cornel West, who's a Princeton professor and civil rights advocate, says, if you want to save the people, you have to serve the people. And I think that's a really important piece of information to keep in mind here. I'm going to talk in the next couple of minutes about four different course experiences that I've designed that use CBPR methods, and talk just show you a little bit about each one of these. In an undergraduate health assessment course, in an undergraduate honors experience, in a primary care APN course, and is also a piece of my faculty research. And the goal in all of these has been to involve students in every aspect of CBPM. The first is the undergraduate health assessment course, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this. This started out of a partnership that I have with the Salvation Army in Bound Brook, New Jersey. This is a small community outside of New Brunswick that has a large percentage of Latino immigrants. And what I did was began to involve my first semester junior students who are taking health assessment, and obviously as part of the health assessment labs and everything, they're learning vital signs and so forth. So we began to participate at the request of the Salvation Army, in a community health fair that was part of a large community celebration held once a year. And so the students at this point are about a month into this clinical, so they're just learning how to do vital signs. And up until this point, all they've done is take vital signs on healthy people, on each other in their labs. So this is a kind of a shocker for them, that there's actually people out there that have hypertension, that there's people out there that have blood sugars of 500, and they're walking around. And so this is a really good experience. We've done this for the last 4 years, and we've had the students come out and do this. I make the attendance at this optional because we only have one day that we can do this, and it's the day that they happen to have this particular community festival. And the students receive a little bit of extra credit, about 3 to 5 points added on to their lowest test grade. And I know in discussions with other faculty members, some people have said to me, I don't like that idea. I don't think that's a good idea. You shouldn't be giving them extra credit for this. Well, the way I look at it is, if you can't get them to the table, you can't feed them. So if I need to do that to get somebody to come out to a clinical to participate, then I can change their mind. And many times students do come to this and they walk away and say, this was great. This was so much fun. I really enjoyed this. They're outside. They're not in a healthcare facility, so that it creates a whole different dynamic. And many of the people who come to this health fair have no health insurance. They have no healthcare provider. Many of them are undocumented. And it just creates a lot of opportunities for teaching and for interaction with the community. Also, we have a lot of people a lot of teenagers who come to the health fair who are interested in careers in nursing. So this kind of keeps the students very busy because they spend lots of time talking to them about what it's like to be a nursing student and whether they should pursue that kind of a career or not. The second type of experiences in an undergraduate honors course, and this started out with a student that I had about 5 years ago who had done an honors project in this same community in Bound Brook. And after she finished this, there was a group of teenage girls that had a teenage ministry within the Salvation Army, and they were all recent immigrants to the United States, and they were in the same high school now, and were very concerned with what they saw was in these incidents of eating disorders, which they were not familiar with. So they came to her and asked her to do a talk on eating disorders, and we devised a nutritional educational program for them. And then her honors project actually spun off into a much larger research project that we eventually finished and published the results this past year in the Journal of Transcultural Nursing. So as part of this project, we've sort of had this idea that research and service are sort of wound together, and that you never do data collection or never do anything in terms of a research activity for the community without giving back and saying, what can I do for you? And this is really part of this whole partnership process. Also, in this same community in Bound Brook, I had received a request to do a charla, or a health education session, from some of the people in the community who wanted to talk about health problems and so forth. And so I developed a PowerPoint sort of talk on health issues among immigrants, and then the bigger issue was to do this big question and answer period and just kind of open this up. And I brought about half a dozen APN students with me. Now, this was a little difficult for them because only about half of them spoke Spanish, the other half didn't. But we managed to work it out, and I think that one of the really good things with this question and answer period, it was it allowed them to sharpen their interviewing skills, especially when you don't have any kind of a chart, you have no information at all to go on, and people would come up later and ask us questions. In this community, we had a lot of fairly well-educated people. Costa Rica has a very high literacy rate, probably one of the highest in Latin America, and many of these people had chronic health problems, knew about them, had been to a provider, had been on the medication before they left Costa Rica, and then came to the United States and had nothing. So this was a real big process of trying to hook these people up with providers. Many of these people were documented. They did have papers, but they were petrified of being deported. And so they really were very reluctant to seek medical care when it was available to them. Another thing that the APN students really enjoyed doing was it gave them an opportunity to teach patients what to ask and what to tell their doctor during an office visit. And they had a lot of fun with that. You know, how to get to the point quickly. You know, we talked to these people and told them, you know, you have about 5 minutes to make your point. So you got to do it quickly. You got to get your foot in the door. And this was a real interesting experience for the NP students to do that. And then in the learning role, these students also learned about alternative medicine, folk methods of healing from the people that attended that charla. Once the participants realized that the students were open to hearing about this, they spent a lot of time talking about some of the alternative medicine that they practiced and really felt happy that somebody was listening to them about that. So that was a good learning point. The last piece of the this method and what I've been using this in has to do with my own research. And this is part of a study that I presented at the Women's Caucus on Monday, and it's a KO1 award that's aimed at building a promotora-mediated physical activity intervention among Hispanic women. And in this project, I partnered with the Salvation Army in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And my research assistants are all undergraduate students in our EOF program, our Educational Opportunities Fund program. So these two students that have been working with me are actually second-generation Latinas, and they come from the neighborhood in New Brunswick where the Salvation Army is located. So this has been a wonderful learning experience all the way around for them and for me. What I did in this study was the two students, we had small focus group type activity called culture circles. And the research assistants were focused as moderator in each one of the groups. We had a co-moderator who was a culture broker, one of the people from the Salvation Army themselves. And then I served as the recorder. Their Spanish is better than mine, so I let them go ahead and take the lead, and I did the recording. So the three of us worked together with each group, and then we debriefed afterwards. But actually, the moderators of these groups were two undergraduate students that I had trained to do this type of work, and they did a very good job. And it helped, because we were learning about physical activity, it helped the members of the community to learn about why physical activity was important, and it also helped the students and myself to learn from these women why they had a difficult time engaging in physical activity. So again, it was a real blurring of teacher and learner here. There was quite a bit that went on. The research assistants were also helpful in recruiting friends who served as babysitters, which was a real key piece to these sessions, was being able to have someone available for child care, and women were very grateful for that. The themes that we came up with in CBPR, obviously, any of you that are familiar with this work know that this is exactly what we want, is empowerment of students and empowerment of patients. And so we have a situation where we have a great deal of power sharing going on. There is learning flowing in both directions, so that both teachers and learners are constantly teaching and learning together. There is mutual respect, respeto and trust that goes on, and this is really important in a population of undocumented people. And the students learned a great deal about immigration issues and the work history of community members and issues that these people face as new immigrants in the United States. In both of these groups, I also had a culture broker. This was a person who, from the community, in each case from the Salvation Army, who could help me pave the way to work with these community members. And both of these women, you know, I would give my right arm for either one of them. They're so helpful. In both cases, these women were bilingual and immigrants, but have been in the United States for a little bit longer, so they were able to see both sides of the coin in terms of the acculturation process, and very helpful. Advantages to these methods, just really briefly. First of all, the community feels they have an advocate. One of the issues that came up this past year, and this is something I'll touch on in the next slide, is that your timetable is not always the same as the community's. And when I was working with the people in Bound Brook, we had a very bad nor'easter storm this past April that demolished much of the community. And these were the same people who had lost most of their homes in Hurricane Floyd back in 2001. So this was a real problem, and I was just about to do this qualitative piece of the study when this happened. And so what happened, these people came to me and said, you know, can you help us out? Many of our people are in shelters, and we have some people that are diabetic. The one man lost his glucometer. A lot of people were just out of touch with their health care, and so I sort of had to drop a little bit about what I was doing and go to help them out for a few days. In the meantime, I was able to latch on to the Salvation Army in New Brunswick, and they were extremely helpful to me, so I was able to sort of transfer the data collection over to them. But this is a—I think this is an issue that comes up. They really see you as an advocate and someone who can go to bat for them when it comes to healthcare issues. The community members gain skills they can use in the working world. In this KO1 award that I have now, where we're teaching these women, the promotoras, how to become exercise leaders, many of these women hope to eventually get jobs as nursing assistants and community health workers. And so that's another hat that I have to wear in terms of looking at sustainability of these types of programs. Students, faculty, and community members are role models, and we're all role models for each other. So this is really an interesting process. This creates non-traditional sites for student clinical experiences and teaches them that nursing is everywhere. And I really like to get the students involved. This is the first semester that they're doing a clinical and health assessment, so right away they get to see what nursing in the community is like. They don't have to wait until their senior year after they've been through, you know, three or four semesters in med-surg in a hospital. You can see it right away. Faculty have a real-time lab to conduct research and get undergrads involved early. I don't want to even get into that. We had a discussion at dinner the other night about how we need to get our students back into graduate school early. And this is a great way to do it, because instead of learning about research from sitting in a boring class and saying, oh my God, I can't believe this stuff, you know, they actually get to get out in the community and they actually get to see me collect data and they get their hands dirty themselves. And for the most part, they love it. I haven't really had anybody who said to me, I didn't like this. And this really creates a seamless blend of research, teaching, and clinical practice, and really kind of rolls them all together so that this is a, you know, works out to be a good relationship for all of us. Some challenges of this is extremely time-consuming for faculty and for the community. You don't always, your timetable isn't theirs, and particularly those of us that are on a tenure track and are very concerned about what's going to happen to us. You know, the timetable for tenure is very different than what the timetable for most people is like. So that sometimes these projects can take a long time, and I've found that you have to set some small goals and spin off some small studies and small publications while you're working to some of these greater goals. You need to feel comfortable sharing control with others and building trust. And let's face it, some of us don't do that. You know, we like to be the head honcho or honcha, and we don't necessarily want to give control over to other people, and if you're that kind of person, you probably shouldn't be doing this. You need to build in time for training. When you're working with people in the community and you want to help get them to help you with as research assistants or community health workers, you're going to need to spend a lot of time working with them. It's different than just training research assistants, and you need to take that into account. Your priorities, as I mentioned, are not the same priorities of the community. I started to do this promotora training. We had set this up to start in November this month, and just like we had the comment about Mondays or Sundays, the Salvation Army, November and December are just not good times for them because they spend so much time with Thanksgiving and Christmas activities. And we've gotten involved in that. Every year we do a Christmas toy drive with one of the Salvation Army centers. Last year we had over 8 carloads of toys that we collected with the Salvation Army, and we partnered with the Rutgers Recreation Service to help us with it. So it was really a big success. And we've done a lot of other volunteer work with them. And then, of course, the quintessential question in public health is, how do you define a community? The community is always changing. We have older residents of this community, and the Latinos are fairly new residents of the community. Who do you include in interventions? Who do you include in these outreach efforts, this kind of thing? Who do you include in the selection of community advisory board members to guide your activities? This is a real interesting question, you know, a very political question in some instances. Potential opportunities for CBPR, two things that personally I think might be some things that I might want to look at down the line, and you may want to look at too if you're involved in this kind of work: shared grantsmanship. Some community-based organizations are interested in applying for program grants, and the university may have some tools that can help them so that it can be a mutual process. And the other thing is involving community members as guest lecturers or involving them as teachers to your students. I had a lot of people after the health fair that I did in October, this past October, say to me, I wish I knew how to speak Spanish. And so there were some people in the group that we decided we need to have a Spanish as a second language class to help out. And there may be some ways that we can do that. And also, the link with alternative medicine, I think, is a real good one here. And again, just in closing, we are all teachers. We are all learners. Since I have to scoot, if anyone has any questions for me, I'd be happy to field anything. That's a real good question. I've talked to a couple people about the IRB issue while I'm in here. What I've done in the research so far has not required me to involve the women as research assistants because they were sort of in the training process. But once they become promotoras and once they are going to be carrying out that intervention, my sense is I really should have them go through IRB training. My IRB did not require that, probably just because we haven't had that many this type of study go through them. But it's definitely made me think quite a bit in the last 48 hours that I need to get something together along the lines of a presentation that we had earlier this morning about a scaled-down version of human subjects certification. Obviously, none of these women are English speakers. And many of them, even if the material was translated into Spanish, they would never understand it. It's on way too technical of a level. So I think that's definitely something that we need to work with and maybe share, you know, our own best practices when it comes to that kind of thing as this movement evolves. This particular study is funded through a grant from NINR, NIH, and they were very receptive to CBPR-type activities. I know that other people have done similar work with CDC grants, and I think it's really catching on with a lot of the major funders right now that this is sort of an upcoming type of thing. So I don't think you'd have a lot of problem, looking for this type of funding right now. Very interesting, yeah. And that is a good point because many of the community-based organizations don't, and Salvation Army is one of them that does not have an IRB process per se. And obviously you have to sit down and kind of hammer out a lot of these details with someone before you go ahead and then approach the IRB, in this case at Rutgers. But I think to formalize that process might be a good way of bringing them up and making them more of an equal partner with the whole process. Yeah.